Hi, this is Mark Torres, senior producer of From the Vault. This week on From the Vault, we celebrate National Latino Heritage Month by presenting the 1981 program, The Resistance of the Maya. This program examines the history of the Mayan civilization from its pre-Columbian heyday as cultural leaders in what is now southern Mexico and most of Central America. Independent radio producer John Walsh does an outstanding job surveying the Mayans by presenting scholars who trace the Mayan civilization from 2500 BC through their resistance to the Spanish conquistadors. By 1981, John Walsh reports on the Mayans living in the Lacandon jungle of Chiapas, Mexico, despite threats from the Mexican government and multinational corporations seeking to exploit the natural resources of the land. Here is John Walsh to introduce The Resistance of the Maya.
This program presents a history of achievement and struggle, The Resistance of the Maya. It will consider the heritage of this indigenous Central American culture, the 450-year rebellion against foreign colonizers, and in particular, the threatened extinction of the Lacandon Maya, the last of the traditional Mayas. Despite the fact that for four succeeding centuries, conquistadors, priests, plantation owners, historians, anthropologists, geographers, archaeologists, and engineers have tried to understand the mysteries of the Maya, most of the fundamental facts about this great civilization remain unknown. Evidence exists to indicate that the Mayan ancestors have inhabited their lands for the past 10,000 years. Today, in the Yucatan Peninsula, in Chiapas, in Guatemala, Belize, and Honduras, live at least 6 million descendants of the Maya, the largest indigenous tribe in the Northern Hemisphere. Their flourishing culture emerged from around the Usumacinta River Valley in southern Mexico and western Guatemala. They still comprise a majority of the population in their regions, and they are still resisting the domination of the settler cultures in their daily life, struggling to maintain their traditional languages and costumes, even while adopting certain Christian beliefs. Professor Gualberto Zapata Alonso speaks Mayan and has studied their pre-Columbian civilization for decades. Here he describes the origins and growth of the Maya.
We have a lot of changes about the evolution of the Mayan culture, because not so long ago, scientists, they thought that the first inhabitants of the country of the Mayans, especially in Honduras and in Guatemala, arrived there about 3,000 years before Christ. And then the establishment of people in villages, when they stopped to be nomads, that was about 500 BC. But later, new investigation was showing that was 800. After new researchers, they found that what 1,500 before Christ. But in 1976, some archaeologists from England and from the United States making exploration here in Belize, in a place that is called Orange Walk, they found a small village. And they found a construction very crudely made with chalk and clay. And inside to that little construction was a charcoal. And they checked it with the carbon-14, and they found that the tree from that charcoal stopped to live 2,500 years before Christ. But more recently, William McNish from the Massachusetts, exploring the Caribbean, he found the evidence of 60 villages of fishermen. And he mentioned that he found also the equipment from fishing, nets for fishing and other equipment, and piece of canoes. And then they calculate to those villages about 6,500 years before Christ. But now we know that the settlement of the people in villages was, when they started to practice agriculture, was 2,500 before Christ. This is why now we change the periods of the evolution of the Mayas. I forgot to tell you that one thing that astonishes us is that in the cave of Loltun. Loltun is a cave that is known for many, many years. It's located 7 kilometers from the village of Oshkutskab. It's 110 kilometers from Merida on south. That cave has about 700 meters long, with several branches inside. In one section of that cave, they found like a vault, you know, and the central part is a mouth that has about 12 meters. It is like a well. And then the mud from the rain through many thousands of years was going inside and was filling the bottom of the cave until having about 20 meters, about 60 feet high. And many trees, they were growing. So the branches of the tree and the top of the trees, they come out from the cave in that mouth. And then archaeologists of the Institute of National Institute of Anthropology and History of Yucatan, of Mexico, the section of Yucatan, they started to explore the cave because they found also carvings and drawings in the walls of the cave. And then excavating about 8 meters and some more centimeters, you know what they found there? Incredible! A piece of a tusk of a mastodont. They found a fibula and a teeth. And they found a little hook of a horse from the Pleistocene. And the same level, in where those remains were located, they found a lot of tools, stone tools, that is showing that man was there in the same time. And they calculated to those remains 8,000 years before Christ. So you can see now the big changes that we have now. This is why the classification that I am making in the guidebook of Chichen Itza, I made in this way, that's since many, many, many years ago to 2,500 is called pre-Mayan period. From 2,500 before Christ to 200 AD is called with the name of a formative or pre-classic period. From 200 AD to 925 AD is called with the name of a classic period. But the classic period is subdivided in three epochs: early classic, flourishing classic, and decadent classic. So the early classic is in between 200 to 625. From the 625 to 800 is the flourishing classic, was the best part of the life of the Mayans. Was when the Mayans, they got the highest level of civilization. But nobody knows why, in 800, they started to decline. And in 925, came a strange phenomena. Suddenly, the Mayans stopped all their activities. They stopped to build pyramids, palaces, temples. They stopped to write dates on stones, because Mayans, they had the custom to do that. Every end of period of 20 years, they carve slabs with different heights. They are called stelas, you know that, huh? And they wrote the dates every 20 years. But later, they started to write dates in smaller slabs every 10 years, and at last they did every 5. In Piedras Negras in Guatemala were located 28 stelas showing dates of 5 years, one after the other. No one is missed. It's a fantastic record, no? But in the, do you know how much the size of the biggest stela? 63 feet high. The front is 1.5, and the thickness is 27. The weight of that monolith is 65 tons. How they could to excavate, to transport it, and to stand without any metal tools? It's really fantastic, though. Maya didn't have metal tools, no animals for transportation, and they never used a wheel, etc.
Eight 8,000 years before the arrival of the Bible, Coca-Cola, electricity, and rocket-launching fighter aircraft, an indigenous culture was developing in the volcanic highlands and tropical jungles around the Usumacinta River. Eventually, these people called the Maya discovered here the zero before any other people in this Earth's history. This ancient civilization understood the roundness of the Earth and its heliocentric revolutions in a system with 7 other planets. They constructed hundreds of enormous and precisely designed temple complexes throughout the lowlands. One of the more spectacular achievements of the Maya was their calendrical system, with a civil year of roughly 365 days, which by current standards was off by only 2/10,000ths of a day. The Mayans had 4 sacred calendars, which could predict solar and lunar eclipses, and which could calculate the synodic revolutions of Venus. The Mayan computation of time included units called alaltuns, which were used to measure periods of 64 million years. At the time of the conquest, the Mayan calendar was the most accurate in the entire world. The Mayans spoke dozens of different languages, and yet artfully and articulately employed one of the only 2 systems of writing that originated in the Western Hemisphere. The Quiché Maya of Guatemala managed to preserve a text of their epic myth about the origins of the world. The Popol Vuh remains one of the sacred books of the Mayan Indians.
Wa'ekut okeriktan shnachish winaktan shtukushpuch richok uhohil winak shecha kutri alom kaholom.
The great expanse of sky was empty, motionless, and still. There were no men anywhere, nor animals, birds, fish, crabs, trees, stones, caves, ravines, grasses, nor forests. There was nothing that could roar or run, nothing that could tremble or cry in the air, only the sea alone and breathless and tranquil. It was night. Silence stood in the dark. Only the Creator, the Maker, Tepeyu, Kukumats, the forefathers, were there in this emptiness, hidden under green and blue feathers, alone and surrounded with light. In this manner, the heart of the sky existed, and here in the heart of darkness, creation was planned. The makers argued each point until their words and thoughts crystallized and became the same thing. Then let the emptiness fill, they said. Let the water weave its way downward so the earth can show its face. Then the makers spoke to each creature in turn, assigning to each a place. And the birds and animals, snakes and jaguars, went looking for their nests and homes. Just then, the sun, the moon, and the stars appeared over the creators and makers. At first, the flesh of humanity was made of earth, of mud, of clay. But then the creators saw them melt away. These people were soft, did not move, had no strength. When these people spoke, they had no mind. Quickly, they were soaked in water and then could not stand. So the Creator said, "Let us try again, because these creatures will not be able to walk or multiply." Next, the figures were made of wood. They could look like people, and they could talk like people, and they could populate the face of the earth. But these people did not have souls or minds and wandered aimlessly. They had no blood, nor substance, nor moisture, nor flesh. Their cheeks were always dry. Immediately, the wooden figures were annihilated, broken up, splintered, and burned. Most of them became monkeys. And the Creator said, "The time of dawn has come. Let the work be finished, and let those who are to nourish and sustain us appear, the noble ones, the civilized ones. Let humanity, the real people, appear on the face of the earth. From the emptiness of the overflowing waters of the Usumacinta River came the yellow ears of corn and the white ears of corn. Four animals delivered this gift. The mountain cat, the coyote, the small parrot, and the crow brought the message that showed the way to the paradise of the yellow corn and the white corn, abundant also with delicious foods of every kind. And there in the Usumacinta River, grinding the yellow corn and the white corn, Shmukane made 9 drinks, and from this food came the strength and the flesh, and with this they created the muscles and the will of the people. After that, the creators began to talk about the making of our mothers and fathers. Only the dough of cornmeal went into the flesh of our first humans, the four people who were created. For the past 450 years, the various settler governments have not been able to suppress the original pride that extends the daily native marketplace beyond reality and joins it with the beauty arising from the dreamy volcanic landscape of Guatemala, reflecting the magnificence of sovereign Mayan ancestors, the Quiché, the Mam, the Cachiquel, the Itza, and others. And here in the marketplace today can still be found one of the greatest achievements of Mayan culture, the food of the gods and the strength of humanity, corn. Corn has been cultivated in Central America for at least 7,500 years. By whatever means the Mayans initially acquired the corn plant, they thoroughly adapted it to their needs. They gradually increased the size of the ear of corn from about the size of an ear of wheat, and even developed the husk that protects the ear from insects and birds. The Mayan Indians also developed different varieties of corn plant, which range in height from 2 feet to over 20 feet, which can mature any time from 60 days to over 11 months after planting, and which can, from a single seed, produce as many as 15 stalks. Long before the European invaders, corn was used by native tribes both to the north and to the south. Corn plants are so versatile that they can be grown commercially from the windswept prairies of Canada to the tropical rainforests of Angola, from below sea level near the Caspian Sea to over 13,000 feet in elevation on the Peruvian Altiplano, and with anything from 10 inches to over 400 inches of rainfall a year. The corn plant still holds the distinction of being the most widely adapted cereal crop known to humanity. In the milpas, soil fertility was maintained through the use of 10 to 15 year periods of fallow, through burying fish next to the seeds, or by simultaneously planting corn and nitrogen-fixing bean plants. Even while being molested and disturbed, the indigenous peoples of North and South would contribute many new things to nourish the European settler communities and their metropoles of empire across the great Atlantic Ocean. 70 varieties of corn and beans, anonas, mangoes, papayas, cranberries, chocolate, tomatoes, pumpkins, cauliflowers, potatoes, turkey, clams, chewing gum, squash, sarsaparilla, strawberries, persimmons, sunflowers, artichokes, chestnuts, rubber, pecans, tapioca pudding, maple syrup, scallops, peppers, peanuts, avocados, pineapples, peaches, wild rice, Brazil nuts, quinine, chili, coca, mezcal, peyote, mate, acorns, tobacco, bananas, and democracy. The Chilam Balam of Chumayel and Sisimin are the Mayan books of prophecy.
The foreigners made it different. When they arrived here, they brought shameful things. When they came here, no fortunate days were granted to us then. This was the cause of our sickness. No more fortunate days for us. No more just decisions. And in the end, we lost our vision. It was our shame. Everything shall we reveal. On that day, dust possesses the earth. On that day, a blight is on the face of the earth. On that day, a cloud rises. On that day, a mountain rises. On that day, a strong man seizes the land. On that day, things fall to ruin. On that day, the tender leaf is destroyed. On that day, the dying eyes are closed. On that day, three signs are on the tree. On that day, three generations stand there. On that day, the battle flag is raised. And they are scattered afar in the forest.
The foreigners arrived from the east in 1502, when Christ-bearing Columbus, on his fourth voyage across the Atlantic Ocean, became the first European to meet and to greet the Mayan Indians, the natives from the land of the turkey and the deer, of the jaguar and the long-plumed quetzal. The Spanish invasion of the Caribbean region quickly grew. By 1517, the native Arawaks of Cuba had been annihilated after only 6 years of forced labor in Spanish settlements. So conquistador Hernandez de Cordoba sailed out from the island with three ships, seeking slaves to work in the Spanish gold mines. He first landed on a place near the mainland, which he renamed Isla de las Mujeres, because of Ixchel and other Mayan goddesses honored there. This was the beginning of the plunder and outrage of Mayan Yucatan. Later during that voyage, at a river's mouth named Champatun, Cordoba attacked with artillery a native chief named Moc Cuo, belching smoke and fire from his ships. Unafraid, the natives resisted from the shore and from their canoes with arrows, lances, and indigenous copper axes. In this battle, the Mayans killed 20 Spanish soldiers, wounded 50 others, including Pedro de Alvarado, and captured two alive, whom they later sacrificed to their rain god, Chacmool. Cordoba himself received 33 wounds, returning to Cuba without any slaves, but with tales of riches and with the gold he had taken and stolen from the temples of Ixchel. While millions of Aztecs died in northern Mexico, the Mayans continued to resist in the jungles and in the highlands. With the blessing of their priests, on the 6th of December in 1523, by the order of Hernan Cortes, first viceroy of Mexico, conquistador Pedro de Alvarado left the lands of the defeated Aztecs to begin the formal conquest of the Mayan tribes in the highlands of Chiapas and Guatemala and in the tropical jungles along the Usumacinta River. Also, at this time, Cristobal de Olid was appointed by Cortes to command the expedition for the conquest of Honduras. 3 years later in Spain, King Charles V granted royal permission for a Castilian nobleman named Francisco de Montejo to conquer the Mayan tribes in the northern peninsula of the Yucatan and to settle the area at his own expense. Montejo was given the titles of provisional governor and captain general for life, and soon after he began his habit of feeding Mayan babies to his trained dogs. The native resistance continued, and here the Spanish would lose more lives fighting the Mayan tribes than in all of their other campaigns against the Aztec, Inca, and Carib tribes combined. By 1535, there wasn't a single white man left alive in the entire Yucatan Peninsula.